Persons listening to this show should experience varying degrees of euphoria and might radiate a warm glow of truth from their entire being. This phenomenon sometimes lasts hours after a typical brain massage. If you are listening with another lights on listener and they begin to glow, don't be concerned. This is a phenomenon normally associated with Pastor Scheidbach's patented brain massage technique and merely means the truth has set them free.
Stand by. The Brain Massage Show is about to blow your mind.
Hello, I'm Jerry Scheidbach, pastor at the Lighthouse and your brain masseur. Get ready for your brain massage.
Truth served here, flavored with delectable wit, succulent sagacity, luscious logic, a gourmet meal for the mind.
Oh, Canada. And now, France. Of course, you've heard about the terrorist attack against a weekly newspaper or magazine, I've heard it called both, in France, and it's named Charlie Hebdo. In French, and I'll give it a shot, Charlie Hebdo, something along those lines. It means Charlie's Weekly. The name for the magazine was taken by its founder, François Cabana, from the floundering, neurotic, self-absorbed, anxious, but beloved character who can't fly a kite, created by Charles Schulz and featured in his Peanuts cartoon, and used by the Frenchies as a satirical jab at Charles de Gaulle. The magazine is noted for its irreverent and profane satire, mocking authority generally and especially political and religious personalities and beliefs. A while back, for example, they stirred up some anger among the Catholics by representing Benedict holding a condom over his head, a prop which was to represent the so-called host, you know, the wafer they suppose becomes the physical body of Christ when they pronounce the hocus pocus, with a caption in French that translates as, quote, "This is my body," end quote. Yeah, pretty offensive. More recently, they depicted Mary with legs spread giving birth to Christ in a profaned, mocking representation of the virgin birth. Understandably offensive to Catholics and Christians, but no one, you notice, firebombed the magazine, and no Jesuit extremists burst into their headquarter offices crying, what would they cry, Vicar of Christ, or something like that, shooting people dead. The Catholics stopped killing people for refusing to bow to the Pope and the Inquisitions a long time ago, okay? No, but not these Islamic nut jobs, oh no. You know, it's true that magazine's cartoonists have taken a special interest in Islam and shot several jabs at Muhammad, depicting him in a wheelchair pushed by a rabbi, depicting him naked in absurd postures, all provocative, all purposely irreverent, all intended to laugh at Islam and Christianity and any other religious or political authority. The founder's principle was this, quote, "Nothing is sacred. Principle number one, not even your own mother, not the Jewish martyrs, not even people starving of hunger. Laugh at everything, ferociously, bitterly, to exorcise the old monsters," end quote. Well, they stirred up some monsters, all right. Monsters of Islam. Two Muslim monster terrorists went into the offices of the magazine while they were in a meeting and shot and killed, I believe every one of their cartoonists, 10 of them, while shouting, "Allahu Akbar." And they did this for lampooning their prophet on the cover of their profane rag. Now, my friends, in France, our heart knows the ache and the anger these madmen gender with their murderous behavior. I can't say this in French, but I'll try. Je suis Charlie. Something along those lines. It's French. It means I am Charlie. And you're seeing it plastered all over France. Too bad. The perversity of jihadists driving people to embrace perversity. Don't go there. And that brings me to my first observation regarding all of this, and perhaps the only one I'll have time for today. Have you noticed who are the champions of free speech today? The vile, the perverse, right? In the early days of Christianity, when the Jews were killing Christians for refusing their demands to not preach in that name, you know, the name of Jesus Christ the Lord, that really bugged them. Well, it was Christians standing for free speech back then and the right and authority to preach the gospel. And then later, when pagan Rome was feeding Christians to the lions for refusing to bow to the Caesars or to Roman laws prohibiting Christianity, it was those Christians standing up to persecution, hurled against them for their beliefs, championing the cause of liberty of conscience and free speech. During the Inquisitions, when the Romanized Catholic Church took up secular power and used it to kill those who disagree with them, well, the champions of freedom of religion and free speech were once again those Christians who were being tortured for refusing to recant and refusing to bow to the blind Roman see. All of these persecutors have lost. Christians survived and prevailed. And they went on to raise up on this earth the greatest nation the world has ever known, one that has served as a beacon of hope and inspired the entire world to embrace and pursue freedom of religion, freedom of speech, freedom of conscience. And you know, for the most part, they were godly, God-fearing people with a strong sense of morality. Imperfect, to be sure, but generally a community of people seeking the good of their neighbors, desiring peace, and wishing goodwill to all mankind. Now the martyrs of liberty of speech are profane, foul-mouthed, God-hating, and Christian-despising, filthy-minded and perverse-hearted people who flaunt their abuse of speech as if were a badge of honor to the freedom of speech. All right. Now, having said that, I agree that freedom of speech must be protected even at the cost of making room for these sorts of vile and profane people. But let's not make them out to be martyrs for free speech. There are two ways to avoid this. One of them is, hey, don't kill somebody just because they abuse speech and use it to disseminate lies or to hurl abuse on others, deserved or otherwise. Second, when some moronic Muslim, and that is intended to differentiate that kind of Muslim from the friendly neighbor who once gave me a Quran some time back and encouraged me to read it with an open mind, which I did, by the way, and found it to be about as nonsensical as anything I've ever read in my life. But anyway, when one of these jihad-headed religious bigots decides to kill someone for offending their religious sensitivities, we can condemn the murders without becoming Charlie Brown. Je suis Charlie? No way! Well, you're a profane, vile, provocateur, intentionally blaspheming Christ, the Lord of heaven and earth. What, you're an atheist? Well, many are, no doubt. I think France has certainly a lion's share of that kind of sentiment. Perhaps those holding the placards that say, in translation, I am Charlie, are indeed. But most of my French cousins are not vile, profane, boorish lubbers, societal parasites feeding a perverse appetite for negative attention by scorning what others revere, and then calling it sport. You know, the Bible talks about those sorts of characters who do mischief for sport in Proverbs 10:23, and God calls them fools. Don't let fools fool you into becoming a fool. No, France, you're not Charlie. You are a decent people provoked to outrage at the indecency of religious bigots against indecent irreligious bigots. Did you catch that? You are, I'm sure, with the rest of us, outraged at the indecency of religious bigots against indecent irreligious bigots because these particular Muslim religious bigots decided to murder the irreligious bigots among you who offend them. But think about the main point here. Isn't it interesting that today the martyrs for freedom of speech and freedom of religion that are held up before us as heroes are not the thousands of Christians today being killed all over the world simply because they're Christians, nor are they the Jews who are hated and targeted for extermination by these monsters of Muhammad. The believers who are persecuted in China, held in prisons, prohibited from openly declaring their faith, preaching the gospel, declaring that simple but elegant truth that Christ died for our sins according to the Scriptures, and that he was buried and arose from the dead according to the Scriptures, and that he was seen alive and physically before the people, and that he will save all sinners who will repent and believe on him. A wonderful message of forgiveness and hope for mankind. These people are being killed all over the Muslim world, but you don't hold up placards that say, I am Christian. You don't identify with them in any kind of personal way and express outrage at the ongoing slaughter and abuse of Christian men, women, and children whose heads are being cut off in front of parents in the name of Allah. But when it happens to a gaggle of disorderly, noisy, irksome cartoonists, wow, then you get all stirred up. These characters are not martyrs for free speech. We have the same thing here in America. Pornographers like Larry Flint and his ilk become heroes for freedom of expression in America. This pervert wraps himself up in the American flag and hides behind the Constitution and America's traditions of liberty. And there are some in this country who think he is a champion of something noble, like freedom of speech. But the truth is, it's guys like Flint and these cartoonists in France who are breaking down the integrity of freedom and making a mockery of the whole idea of freedom of speech. The reason Christians sustained their persecution and overcame and continue to do so today is that their freedom has integrity. It has a depth of honor. These cartoonists are benefactors of a freedom purchase at the expense of much blood of genuine martyrs for the cause of conscience. And I do not begrudge their freedom, even though I certainly despise their abuse of it. But these people are not martyrs for anything so noble as freedom of expression. They are undermining the foundations of that freedom. Now, this is something many do not understand. What supports and gives honor and glory to something so beautiful as freedom is that it protects truth, it protects honor, it protects liberty, it protects conscience. What these guys do is they attack conscience, they attack truth, they attack honor, and you say, well, that's your opinion. And I say, yeah, you're right. That is my opinion. What's yours? Think about it. If someone uses freedom of movement and freedom of the marketplace, let's say, to buy a gun and then go to where you are working and shoot you, well then, if he gets shot in the process, for example, would we make him a martyr of freedom of movement or freedom of the market? How stupid is that? And neither do we then decry these freedoms because someone abused them. Of course not. But no one would deny that using these freedoms in this way is an abuse of those freedoms. I know it's sort of a simplistic thing, but there is a profound truth under this simple illustration. Just because someone is killed in the exercise of certain liberties that we all cherish, that does not make them a martyr for those liberties. Also, it's possible to exercise liberty in a manner unworthy of the liberty they're exercising. Maybe what the Charlie cartoonists did with their liberty does not, in your opinion, represent a degrading use of that liberty. But the liberty used by their killers to kill them certainly does represent an abuse of liberty, right? Well, there are some in France challenging the liberties of other Muslims living there as a consequence of this attack and other attacks in the past. For example, some are calling for immigration laws forbidding Muslims from entering France merely because they're Muslim. And they're calling for stepping up deportations of Muslims from France and for otherwise interfering with the freedom of movement of Muslims in that country. I mean, for example, like the burqa ban. Yeah. Did you know that in France, wearing a burqa is criminalized, virtually criminalized, because it's against the law to wear clothing that covers your face in public? Ostensibly, the basis of the law is that it encourages people to live together. A human rights court supports this. Now, we both know this targets Muslim women, and it's intended to keep jihad-headed Muslim men from going about in public posing as a woman. But do you see my point? Women arrested for wearing the burqa in France are not hailed as martyrs of freedom of expression, but cartoonists who irreverently mock what others revere are. I hope you're thinking about this now. I hope you're getting the point and not losing it in our mutual agreement that the burqa law, I think, has some merit, or that these cartoonists ought not to be killed simply because they abuse liberty. But for heaven's sake, man, don't turn them into martyrs. They certainly do not deserve any such honor. And doing so only serves, in the end, to undermine the liberties they are honored for abusing. Hold on to the break. I'll be right back.
Pastor Scheidbach is lighting the lamps in the Belfry Arch, alerting all Americans that the commies are coming. The commies are coming. Help us spread the message. Go to www.thebrainmassageshow.com or write us at Post Office Box 2803, Santa Maria, California, 93457. The devil beware. Pastor Scheidbach is on the air. Stand by. The Brain Massage Show is about to blow your mind.
Hello, my dear friends. Welcome back. Jerry Scheidbach here, pastor at the Lighthouse, your brain masseur, and Paul Revere's lantern lighter, lighting the lamps in the church belfry arch, signaling the enemies on the march, an enemy that would steal from us our liberty. I've been stewing on Obama's latest gesture of comradeship to dictators everywhere, and I'm thinking of Cuba at the moment. Did you know that after the Spanish-American War, Cuba was actually held under the control of the United States for about 4 years, 1898 to 1902, under a United States military government? Spain surrendered all the territories they held in the Pacific, Puerto Rico, Guam, the Philippines, and Cuba. And for reasons I don't totally understand, Teddy Roosevelt granted independence to Cuba. Maybe it was a gesture of goodwill toward the Cuban people, a way to assure them America really did not intend to simply replace Spain and colonize Cuba. Anyway, Teddy granted them independence with terms that included the right to lease indefinitely Guantanamo Bay and I think a few other areas for naval installations, and the right of intervention, ostensibly if Cuba ever came under the power of forces hostile to the United States. Now, soon after this independence was granted, the Platt Amendment was made law. The Cubans, who were before almost universally supportive of American intervention, became polarized now, where about half the country began to feel America was disingenuous about Cuban independence and was simply replacing Spain, and then the other half wanting to annex Cuba to America and just make it part of the United States. Well, a little while later, a revolution began to develop, and America considered it a threat to her interests and stepped in to stop it. And this was called the Second Occupation of Cuba, and it lasted from 1906 to 1909. Franklin Roosevelt comes along, and he initiates what he called the Good Neighbor Policy toward Cuba, and in that treaty, the Platt provisions were repealed. It's called the Treaty of Relations, and while it eliminated the Platt provisions, seven agreements or something like that, it maintained the earlier agreement, allowing America to indefinite right to lease Guantanamo, for example, and the right of intervention. Anyway, when Castro started his Marxist revolution in Cuba, he contested the treaty, claiming it was forced on the Cuban people. America hesitated to become involved in Castro's revolution for a list of reasons, but partly because it would involve possibly moving from a Cold War status with Russia into an open war status. President JFK threatened to intervene shortly after the Cuban killer Castro completed his Marxist castration revolution and began playing footsie with shoe-pounding Khrushchev, leading to the Cuban Missile Crisis. You might remember that. Many think this prompted plans that ended in Kennedy's assassination. I wonder. So let me offer some hindsight now. Hindsight number one, we should have intervened during the revolution and stopped Castro. Hindsight number two, JFK should have followed through with the attack and, politically speaking, castrated Castro back then. Hindsight number three, the Warren Report on Kennedy's assassination should have been taken seriously, and an investigation into allegations that Cuba-Russia had plants within the United States that carried out the assassination should have been vigorously pursued. Let's turn to some insights now. Insight number one, we need a truly Reagan moment, where a genuine leader of the free world will stand like a Moses and demand that Castro set my people free. Insight number two, Obama's actions are cowardly and will only strengthen the Castro brothers' control and thereby extend the misery of the people they have enslaved. Now let's consider that misery for a moment. Put this picture in your mind. Government housing in Cuba, made available by the gracious dictator to faithful Cubans, for a price, of course. 10% of the income of the head of household for life. And they never can own it. But that's not the picture I want you to keep in mind. As I describe life in Cuba, here is the picture. Picture a bathroom with a shower fixture, a shower head, cemented into the shower stall that doesn't work, that in fact is connected to nothing but the wall. Or in other words, it's a mere decoration. Imagine that, Johnny. My friend David Baskett recommended a book to me, and I have recently begun to read it and read most of it, by Carolina Oninger. She worked as a translator and has studied in the Universidad Católica of Chile. And she's conversant in English, Spanish, and French, but her native tongue is Spanish. Her book is titled Cuba, Island of Deception. I recommend the book to anyone interested in a first-hand accounting of present life in Cuba. I mean, for the real Cubans. When you read her book, you'll notice some occasional syntax issues arising from her Spanish way of phrasing things, but it doesn't interfere with getting to her message. It's a good book. You ought to get it. Once you get past the facade, that thin layer of paint and decorative fixtures of peace and contentment in Cuba, you know, when you get past the Cubans whose manliness and human dignity have been castrated by the Castros, neutered of any original thinking or personal opinions, not handed to them or fed to them by the regime, you find a very different Cuba is experienced by those who live there. You are met with propagandists for communism from the time you leave the plane throughout your stay. Unless you find a way to stray off the beaten path, as Caroline did, you won't see the real Cuba. For example, the average wages for a Cuban these days amounts to the equivalent of about $10 per month. They live on heavily subsidized government food and housing handouts. The automobiles they treasure are all old vintage American-made cars. It's as if the island was frozen in the late 50s. No progress. Frozen in time. As for Castro's famous food basket program, he's always harping about, well, the food is rationed in Cuba. Each person is allotted a certain amount of foodstuffs, and it's only enough to feed them for about 3 weeks out of the month. They have to go without at least a week or so until the first rolls around again. The people are hungry much of the time. Even if they had the money, they would not be legally allowed to buy food beyond their rationed amounts. You got an island here surrounded by fish, and the Cubans cannot be allowed to go out on a boat, though, for fear they will hightail it to America. And that's because Castro has made Cuba such a wonderful place to live, you know. If you get caught messing with the food rationing thing, it's off to prison for you for a minimum of 5 years, and it's typical for such persons to never be seen or heard from again. It's also considered a criminal offense to criticize the food. There's enough money flowing into Cuba to feed all the people well every day of the month. Over $2 billion per year from tourism alone. But the Castros use the scarcity game in order to create animosity against America. They blame America's embargo for so-called food shortages. Other people can have one bun of fresh bread daily, and it's available very cheap. They give them enough to make sure they keep breathing. And it's such poor quality, hard as a rock. They can't even get powdered milk easily. And you have to secure a special stamp from the government to get fresh milk. The elderly are forced to submit papers in order that they might purchase a single can of dry cereal per month. Each person is allotted 8 ounces of coffee per month. I drink that much per cup. And if you slaughter a cow for food, you go to jail unless you've obtained government approval to do so. There's no potable water or running hot water available to something like 90% of the population. And then what water is available is rationed out. Water is released to the cities at scheduled times each day. Can you believe this? In provinces, it's delivered one time every other day. And about 30% of the population live in these provinces. The state takes 10% of the income from the head of household for housing that is run down, dilapidated, and, well, very dated. No ownership of houses or cars is allowed. These things are all owned by the state and doled out at the discretion of the Castros. Now, Cuba is known for its rich farmlands. As everyone knows, they grow and harvest tobacco and manufacture some of the finest cigars in the world, if not the finest, according to those who smoke them, and not moi. The soil there could produce enough food to feed the people and provide substantial exports, but Castro has suffocated farming by his greed and his evil cleverness in the implementation of his communism. He offers the people land and seed to plant if they agree to return 50% of what they grow to the state. Well, as onerous as that is, many have taken his offer, only to discover, when it comes time to deliver the harvest, the government shows up and takes 90%. Suddenly you find out that in the fine print, you've got to pay for the land after all, and you've got to pay for all the seed, and then you've got to pay the Castros a commission on top of that, and by the time you're done, the Castros have castrated you. So anyway, the farmer ends up about where he would be if he didn't bother farming, and farming's a lot of hard work, and so incentive is kilt, and so farming land lays dormant. And everything is rationed. I mean, even soap, for heaven's sake. You get one bar of body soap per person per month. You get one tube of toothpaste for every 4 persons per month. You get one bar of clothes soap per month, and detergent is simply not available. No one has appliances. I mean, not the real people. The Castro goons get it. They get to have all that stuff. Unlimited supplies of all these other things and plenty of other goodies and appliances and so on, but not the people. No personal computers, no flat screen TVs, no washers, no dryers, no freezers, not even music systems are available. The elite have all these things, but not the people. As for voting, well, Castro was a good student of Lenin, and he is glad to let the people vote, so long as he controls who counts the votes. No outside independent observers are allowed, and only if the faithful members of Castro's regime are allowed ever to get close enough to the votes to count them. And when the vote is counted and it doesn't add up to give Castro's a win, then his dutiful dupes draw on the death registry, registered voters, whatever number of votes they need to keep the Castros in control of the lives of the Cuban people, kind of like what goes on here. Castro came to power by shedding the blood of thousands and maintains his power over Cuba by the constant threat of imprisonment and death, and actively promotes communism everywhere he can throughout the world, with certain operatives active here in America. Castro is a true believer in Lenin, who said, quote, "It doesn't matter a jot if 3/4 of mankind perishes. The only thing that matters is that in the end, the remaining 1/4 should become communist. communists, end quote. All right, that's hindsight and insight. Now, how about some foresight? What Castro has done to Cuba is what Obama and his ilk want to do to America. They want Americans to be dependent upon the government for a subsistence level of provision that they can control. They want the government to control every facet of our daily lives. They want to confiscate our property and our income and decide how we spend our money and our time. They want to decide what you eat, when you eat, and how much. They want to dictate where you work and what work you'll do. They want to tell you what cars you'll drive and whether or not you will drive. They want to own all the property and dole it out to those they can control. And they want to force their morality on your lives. Look at Cuba and see America as Obama and his minions envision it. The sanctions placed on Cuba by America were intended to send a clear message that we reject and do not support communism, nor do we support the castration of Cuba by the Castro brothers. And yet, we don't sanction China. I don't trust Obama. Everything I've seen from him compels me to conclude his overtures toward Castro right now are intended to help Putin's pal, to strengthen the faltering Castro regime, to render them aid and assist them in continuing their oppressive policies. His weak calls for Castro to back off his oppressive policies are so weak, so obviously weak, they're pathetic and laughed at by people here and abroad, and not believed at all by the Cubans. There is no clarion call for the Castros to tear down this wall of oppression against the Cuban people. There is no open and clear reproof against the Castros for their brutal tyranny against the people. If he accompanied some serious and open rebuke for their crimes against humanity and demanded they set the people free, and, here you go, flew provisions of foodstuffs over the country, making relief drops to the people regularly. Compliments of the home of the brave and land of the free, baby. Ha! That would be a great idea. Drop leaflets all across the land advising the people of the location of food drops, and then let Castro know that we're going to send in the Blackhawks to patrol the food drops as a friendly warning that if any of his goons interfere, there will be consequences. I mean, aren't you tired of this nonsense from these murdering thugs? Who in this country is shielding them from serious retaliation? That's what I want to know. I call for a Cuba Libre of another kind. The words mean free Cuba right now, however. It's the name of an alcoholic drink, and the only sort of free Cuba the Castro brothers will allow is a little something to cloud the mind, numb the pain of the misery they engender upon the Cuban people. How about a real Cuba Libre? Genuine freedom. Not the mere decorative fixture of a shower head on a shower wall, but a real shower of the blessedness of freedom that comes from the truth. Castro has castrated the Cuban people and made them sycophants to tyranny with the threats of death and even greater impoverishment, force-feeding them the lies of communism. It's time the people of Cuba were given a taste of new Cuba Libre. And that freedom must be founded upon the great truth that undergirds our own liberties if we will remember what our founders understood, that all men are created equal and endowed by their creator, not the Castros, with certain inalienable rights. I have lit the lamps in the church belfry arch. And now you let me know if you see that they are on. Call 1-888-770-8000. That's 1-888-770-8000. And say lights on if you agree, lights off if you disagree. That invitation extends to podcast listeners as well. You may email me by going to our website at thebrainmassageshow.com. That's thebrainmassageshow.com. God bless you. God save America. I'll see you in church. Cuba Libre!
Churches have led our nation toward the ruin we face, and it's up to the churches to lead us back from destruction. God calls his people back to the old paths. Lighthouse Baptist Church is inviting God's people to join us on the old path. Call 347-9887 or go to santamarialighthouse.org for more information.
Calling all Lights On listeners to The Brain Massage Show. Keep the lights on. Go to www.thebrainmassageshow.com and make your donation today. Or mail it to P.O. Box 2803, Santa Maria, California, 93457.
For a complete brain massage experience, tune in Saturdays at 7:30 a.m.